Hi, this is David James.
Dean Windus here.
It's Leeds United captain Liam Cooper here.
Hi, this is Scott Minto.
Joby McAnuff here.
Joe Thompson here.
This is Wickham Wanderer striker Eddie Bowerick in Fenway.
This is Brian Dean.
It's Jack Butler from Stoke City.
Hi, this is referee John Moss.
It's Robert Earnshaw.
It's Pee Wee United striker Aaron Tony.
Portsmouth defender Christian Burgess.
This is Blackburn's Bradley Dack.
The EFL have asked me to make a simple but crucial message.
I cannot stress to you how important it is.
We're in difficult times right now.
It's very important for all of us.
Please, please, please.
Stay at home.
Stay at home.
Stay at home.
Please stay at home.
The advice is to stay home.
We need to stay home.
Stay at home and protect the NHS.
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 That, in turn, will help us to save lives.
We save lives.
Save lives.
Save lives.
And doing something so little, we can help the NHS.
Let's save lives. Thank you.
You're listening to the official EFL podcast.
Oh, O'Connell's mistake. McGinn. Green!
Potts isolated. Lolly goes for goal. And what a goal!
Whitbread with a header. Alexander. Tries an instinctive volley. Oh, what a goal that is! That is one of the greatest goals you will ever see at Wembley from Gary Alexander to put Millwall level. And just look at
hello again and welcome to the second part of our in-depth interview with Simon Grayson. We ended last week's episode with Simon just beginning life in his dream job as Leeds United manager. But back in 2010 and in his second season in charge, despite Leeds being in League One at the time, he was handed a tie at the club's fiercest rivals. After beating Kettering Town in extra time, they were drawn against reigning Premier League champions Manchester United at Old Trafford in the FA Cup third round. I started the episode by asking Simon whether or not he thought that they could win that game.
Look, I was the one that was saying that with it to the squad that we were going in that game.
But inside, did you think you could win it?
Look, I think you have the sense of reality that Man United with the present Premier League champions, we were a League One club doing well in League One. What were the odds that we were going to win the game? Probably high, but I had a genuine belief that we had a group of players that could perform on the big stage, get big results, and had a real desire to try and prove people wrong. I think one of the things that I said to the players leading into the week or even the morning of the game when we had a meeting was that there is always a surprise in the FA Cup in each round. Why can't it be us going to Old Trafford, a League One club playing against the Premier League champions? Why can't it be us that are going to be, everybody's going to be talking about in the next few days? Well, as it turns out, for the next few years, and many, many years. So we did have that genuine belief that maybe a lot of people from the outside, and rightly so, didn't give us that credit that maybe we could go and do something. So we went there, a free hand, because as I said, nobody's expecting you to do that. But when you look back on the game and you analyse it and speak to people, we genuinely earned the right and deserved to win that game.
And when you obviously look back at it now, in terms of Leeds' modern history, it's one of the iconic moments, isn't it? How do you, as a fan, how do you sort of like process that in your mind, that you were a manager, a Leeds United manager that won at Old Trafford against a manager of the likes of Sir Alex Ferguson?
Well, it's what people talk to you about all the time, you know what I mean? Sort of, they don't remember the defeat at Hereford or things like that. It is a day that will long live in the memories of everybody who was connected on that day, or even who was at the ground or where they were. That's how special it is to Leeds United fans, that people come up to you and say, I was in a bar in Australia, I was this, that and the other, because of the size of the club, people were all over the world, and people still sort of talk to you about it and ask me how I felt on that particular day. And it was a strange build-up to the game, because, quite ironic, a couple of weeks before, I was at an airport waiting for my son to come back from a school trip, and I bumped into Brian Flynn. He was there, and he played for Leeds in the 70s. And he said, you remember the last person to score the winning goal for Leeds United at Man United? I went, hey, it must be years ago. I haven't got a clue, Brian. He said, it was me. And it was quite strange. He said, well, maybe it's going to be somebody might take that mantle off me, and somebody else might be the one that's going to carry on with this new record as such. So it's quite strange to see Brian. But a lot of people don't realise is that the draw was made after we'd earned a replay at Kettering. And we still had to overcome Kettering in the replay at Elland Road, which everybody probably thought was going to be an easy tie for us. They took us to extra time. And it was all like talking about the Leeds against Manchester United. But don't forget, the Kettering lads had this opportunity, one to beat Leeds United at, in the FA Cup, and then to the carrot was to go to Old Trafford and play against the Premier League champions. So they made it really difficult, and it wasn't until extra time that we ended up scoring two or three late goals to get that tie. So people forget about that banana skin that we nearly didn't overcome. But when you had the build-up to the game, and players will tell you more because they were out and about in the streets of Leeds in the build-up to it. I would drive to Thorpe Arch, do my work and go back home. But lads were in amongst the city, supporters will be coming up to Jermaine and other lads saying, look, you've got to realise how much this means to us. Do not let them lot beat us. You've got to give your all, and you've got to make sure that you, if Rooney's playing, you go and smash him, you go and do this and that. And so the players, if they weren't aware of what it meant to the supporters before, the couple of days before the game, they certainly did, because they'd had everybody and every Tom, Dick and Harry coming up to him saying what it was all about.
And for you as well, I mean, where does it rank in terms of the list of your achievements? Because if you look at that game, taking the emotion and the connection out of it in terms of Leeds against Manchester United, in terms of your managerial career, it wasn't really a significant result in terms of, you know, you didn't earn a promotion, you just got through to, you know, it's not insignificant, but got through to the FA Cup fourth round. But how do you rank it as a manager in total, taking that emotion and the connection into account?
It's got to be up there, because you're the manager of a team that beat the present Premier League champions. You beat Sir Alex Ferguson in his own backyard, who was and has been the most influential manager in British football, if European world football, for many, many years, against a group of players that were at their peak of their careers. And we're not talking that it was a fluke, and we're not talking that there were a team that had the young kids playing it. They had a lot of their top stars playing because they knew the significance of the game. So to beat Sir Alex any particular time, whether it's at Elland Road or any other games, but to do it at Old Trafford is a highlight for any coach, any manager. You're not saying you've got one over him and suddenly you're a better manager than him, because it's quite a long stretch of imagination, but it's a feather in your cap, and what it meant to you as a young coach who you looked up to, somebody who's influenced the game for so long. It was a massive feather in your cap.
And how was it received as well, in terms of after the game, when you spoke to Sir Alex Ferguson? Did you get a chance to speak to him after the match and talk through it?
Well, if it were, just go through the game to start with, that you'd the goal that we scored, I'm right behind it, and you just, Jermaine had done what he'd done, taken a bad touch, he'll say he deliberately meant it, and then you can just see the ball that was going into the back of net, and you're thinking, I hope this has got enough pace on it, and it did, and the lads celebrating. And then throughout, that was early on in the game, 15 minutes in or something like that, but even though you get into the latter stages of the game, you look at your watch, it's like 89 minutes, you're thinking, still got Fergie time, we could be playing 10 minutes of extra time here, or play until next goal wins. and it was like, but we were comfortable, they didn't really threaten us too much, the team defended well, we at the bar, we had other opportunities, but you still always thought at the back of your mind, they've got a player that can do something out of nothing. But then you just looked across the referee and he blows his whistle, it's like, God, has this actually happened? And you turn to Sir Alex and he comes to you and says, look, well done, come and have a drink in the office. So we go back to the dressing room, obviously celebrating on the pitch with the 9,000 supporters that were at Old Trafford at the time. Goes into the dressing room, which was a fantastic place, as you can imagine. And I always remember walking back out the tunnel with Paul Jewes, who was the head of the media lad, and he's walking down the tunnel really quickly to go up to do the radio interviews, which was in the main stand there. And we still had to do all the paper interviews underneath in the other media area. And there's still the 9,000 Leeds fans in there. And he's walking really fast. I'm saying, Jewsy, slow down. Let's just sample, because he was a lead supporter as well. I said, let's just check this in, because believe me, this ain't going to probably happen ever again, that we're going to win at Old Trafford with 9,000 supporters in. And it was just a surreal moment. So you do all your interviews, you go back in, and because it was a big game, I had more staff there than I'd done all season. They all came out of the woodwork from suddenly Alan Sutton was part-time physio that was there, never travelled on an away game, but all of a sudden decided that he wanted to be at Old Trafford. So they've all gone into Sir Alex's office, which was great experience for the lads. So I always remember Sir Alex sort of across the room says, do you want a glass of red or white wine? So in tongue-in-cheek sort of fashion, I said to him, look, I don't do anything that's got any red in it, so I'll have a glass of wine, white wine. And I could just see sort of his eyes like come across and I said, look, I'll have whatever you want. He was joking, but I thought, well, I'm a bit sarcastically, I'll just say that thing. But I also remember him saying to me, look, he was very humble and he did say that you deserve to win. He says, but you now know the pressure that you're under. So I says, what do you mean? He says, well, the pressure is that I've got X amount of money on you to get promoted this year. So that's your real pressure. So I said, well, you better let Ben lend me Berbatov and Rooney to try and get over the line then. And obviously in them days, you're allowed to bet on football. But he was good and he's somebody even before then. But afterwards, you've got huge, huge amount of respect for. Because as much as it hurt him on that particular day that he didn't like losing to any team, he didn't like losing to Old Trafford and he certainly didn't like losing to Leeds United, he was very gracious in defeat through gritted teeth.
Yeah, because he was very respectful in terms of his lineup that day as well. Yeah. He played quite a few, you know, against the League One team, no disrespect to Leeds at the time, but he played a lot of his first team players. You mentioned likes of Wayne Rooney,
Gary Neville for Berbatov, Wes Brown played. Giggs, I think, maybe came on as well. They did. They had a real strong team out.
And how did you use that for the rest of the season? Was it because you were doing? I think you were top of the league at the time when you played Manchester United. But it seemed like it obviously went down to that final day. Did the euphoria of an occasion like that and the continuation of that FA Cup run, did it affect the momentum a little bit? The fact that there's obviously so much to celebrate.
Well, it wasn't just that game. It was probably the next round of the FA Cup. We go to Tottenham and we draw 2-2 down there. Jermaine scores a late goal and we get them in the replay back to Elland Road. And was it a distraction? Of course, you're going to take any time that you get the opportunity to play against the Premier League clubs in FA Cup ties, and you do well because of the profile that it's lifting the club again and the individuals within the group. But it did play its part because I'm pretty sure of it that the next game after the Old Trafford game, we had to go to Exeter and play against Paul Tisdale's team. And I saw his interview recently where he felt that his attire was the reason why they won. And look, everybody's got a reason for it. But I think as a manager, when you listen to more experienced managers and they talk about when they've been away maybe on a European game and they find it hard to be motivated for the next game, I think it took our players a couple of games to get back to the physical and the mental side of it, thinking that we are now back to the bread and butter of our games and the motivation level has to not just come from the actual game you're going to be playing, but from within to go and get results and back on it again. And and that's why we suffered the defeat at Exeter. And I don't, probably two or three games before we really got back in amongst it again. And again, in the Leeds United way, we went through some ups and downs, got to Easter where we were sort of struggling and we got a couple of decent results. Well, no, Easter Monday, I think, we go to Yeovil and we're on the telly and we'd just been beat, I think, by Swindon on the Saturday, who were one of our rivals, and we got beat 3-0 and there was a lot of pressure building on the team and myself. And we go to Yeovil and Richard Naylor scores twice, and for Nails to score twice in any game was a big part. But it got us back on track going into the last couple of games of the season.
And the pressure of those games, though, especially obviously the Bristol Rovers game, how much of a different emotion was there to that match compared to the match at Old Trafford? I guess it's two different worlds. No pressure on the match at Old Trafford.
Like when people say, which is your highlight of that season? It has to be the Bristol Rovers game because we'd worked so hard all season to try and have the one aim that we started pre-season, and that was to get promotion. Winning Old Trafford, fantastic day for everybody, lives long in the memory for everybody. But it was just a one game. We had 40-odd games to try and achieve what we needed to do for for the next season and the season after, and moving the football club back to better times after suffering such a devastating period over the last few years. So there was a lot more riding on that game. I remember the week before we were down at Charlton, and it was still in our hands then. If we'd won the game, we got promoted, and we were losing late on. And I remember playing with probably six players up front, because if we lost it, we made no difference. We still would have to win the last game of the season, and if we'd won at Charlton, we could have secured it then. But as people connected with Leeds United know, that if you're going to do something, you never do it the easy way. But we went into the game thinking, if somebody had offered us at the start of the season that we're going to go into the last game of the season, a full house at Elland Road, playing Bristol Rovers, who had nothing to play for, win that game and you're promoted, I'm pretty sure everybody connected with Leeds United would have taken that. We'd like to have done it a month before, but if we had to do it that way, then so be it.
And like you say, crazy game though, as well. What was going through your head when, well, particularly when Max Gradle was sent off? The Mad Max moment.
Yeah, it was just weird. We'd started the game. Jermaine had not been in the team for the last few weeks because he'd not been playing well enough, and I thought maybe his mindset was elsewhere because he was going to leave on the club in the summer on a free transfer. One or two players were injured. I left Johnny Howson out of the team. I think Snodgrass might have been out of the team, and we went with the team the games before that we wanted, that we thought might help us get promoted. And a few decisions to make about who was going to play, who was going to captain the team, because Norbo, who was another influential signing, was out, had done his Achilles early part of the season, and we were pretty much down to the sort of, not the bare bones, but a lot of our group of main players were not playing to the best of the capabilities, or were injured or unavailable. And we go into that game thinking, right, let's do whatever we can to win the game. But then, as you said, Max just makes a decision that you're thinking, what, because of pressure. And the pressure did tell on Max that he just made that irrational decision by stamping on Daniel Jones and left us with 10 men just before half time.
Did you think the worst at that moment?
Well, I thought it wasn't going to be easy, but I still genuinely believe that we would be able to get something out of the game. And it was quite strange. And that at half time, I ended up walking down the tunnel with Daniel Jones, who was obviously lied on the floor when Max stamped on him. And just some things just come into your head, or it just happens without thinking about it, that I turned to him and said, don't forget second half where you're going to be playing. He says, what do you mean? I says, well, you're playing left back, you're going to be in the far northeast corner, which is the furthest part from the tunnel, and if we lose this game, all the best getting off this pitch, right? And anyway, so the game obviously happens, and I'll finish this story before you talk about the goals and other stuff. And we're 2 minutes before the end of the whistle, and we're winning 2-1. Who's playing right wing with 2 minutes to go instead of left back? Daniel Jones. He stood next to the dugouts, ready for the whistle to go, to run down the tunnel. And whether my mind games or anything that I said to him played a part on that, but obviously there's a lot of other incidents happened before that we got to that stage.
Well, that's a interesting story. I never thought of it like that way. But again, just you've got to focus on the goals, obviously, and Jermaine in particular. You made him captain as well. What was the thinking behind that in terms of making that decision? And obviously, one of his two most iconic goals in his career came that season. Did you always know he was a player that, you know, could give you those big moments?
He was a big game player. He liked the publicity, he liked the adulation, he liked the pressure of dealing with the situation, because I felt that he thrived on that situation. I talk many times about your man management and knowing your players and what brings the best out of them, that he'd not had a good time, he'd not been playing anywhere near like he could have done, but I just felt that this was an opportunity. Nails was injured, Paddy was injured, Johnny Howson, who was maybe one of the other ones that would maybe be captain, was injured or was on the bench. And I just thought, well, let's give it to Jermaine. Because we'd laughed and joked a few games before that Snods would give Jermaine the armband and he would say, at the last minute, can Jermaine pass that to whoever ended up getting it? And then Snods give it to him in the dressing room of the Bristol Rovers game, and Jermaine's waiting for him to say, pass that on to somebody. And he went, know your captain today. And I remember Jermaine saying, yeah, good one. Who am I going to pass it on to? And Snod said, no, you're captain for the day. Come on, we're going to do the team sheet now. And you could just sense these sort of, it just became this person who thrived in that opportunity to be.
It meant a lot to
him. Yeah. And normally when things are kicking off on the pitch, Jermaine was probably a type of character that is amongst it, a bit petulant at times. But he was there separating the referee and Max with his own players and getting him off the pitch. Well, that would, if somebody had said before the game Jermaine would do that, you'd be probably laughed about it and thought, not a chance. But he was. It just brought this personality out of him that I don't know, the extra pressure he wanted to thrive off.
And the emotion, though, from that game, that after it, the relief, the sense of, you know, what you've achieved, you've got Leeds out of League One. How did you sort of process that in terms of, because obviously, I mean, Old Trafford was a big occasion, but the achievement of winning that game obviously meant so much to so many people.
Well, it did, and the circumstances, many people will still remember that we went 1-0 down. We're 10 men with just after half-time, and it's like, we're 10 men, well, God, what are we going to do? And I made a decision to go from a back four and play 3-4-2 or something like that. Is that 10 players? And I remember taking Andy Hughes off, saying, look, I've got to do this. And Hughes was a tighter player that summed up Leeds at the time, that he said, understand it. I want to stay on and do whatever I can do to make this happen. But it's the best decision to make, Gaffer, because I'm not going to win you the game. I thought, all right, well, at least you realise why I'm taking you off. But it was a weird game that everything that could happened. Johnny Howson comes on and scores a fantastic goal with more or less his first touch. And it was as if we were playing with 15 players and they were down to 9 men. The atmosphere was electric and their players could not handle the pressure. The goalkeeper, Anderson, had played really well, one of the best goalkeepers in the division, decided unexpectedly to throw it out from one of our quick breaks that hit their lad on the back or something that fell to Bradley and then to Jermaine, and we go 2-1 up, and it's just like, right, now we've just got to make sure that we don't do anything stupid that Leeds United can do and concede when we're on top. And the euphoria of sort of, when that final whistle went, people running onto the pitch, all the staff, all the players, it was just a huge amount of relief, more than anything, that we'd achieved what we set out to do when it really could have gone pear-shaped. Because if we'd gone into the playoffs, hand on heart, did I think we could get promoted? Probably not, because I just thought the psychological aspect of it would be a massive task for us to pull off something like that after the disappointment.
It takes something special to score a goal, but it only takes 20 seconds to wash your hands. Stay at home, protect the NHS, save lives.
While isolating, you may well get bored, frustrated, or lonely. You may feel low, worried, or anxious, concerned about your finances, your health, and those close to you. Here's some important advice. Draw on support from friends, family, and other networks during this time. Try to stay in touch with those around you over the phone or online. Look for ideas of exercises that you can do at home on the NHS website. Spend time doing things that you enjoy. This could include reading, cooking, other indoor hobbies, or listening to and watching favourite radio or TV programmes. Try to eat healthy, well-balanced meals, drink enough water, exercise regularly. Try spending time with the windows open to let in some fresh air, arranging space to sit, and see a nice view if you can, and get some natural sunlight, or get out into the garden, or sit on your doorstep if you can. Try to focus on the things that you can control, who you speak to, and who you get information from.
I mean, you are the last manager to guide Leeds to promotion. Do you think that's the thing in terms of the club, that the level of expectation and the level of pressure that's on the players, can that get to them at the crucial ends of the season?
I think so. I think, I always remember, even when I was there as a young player, that people, Howard Wilkinson would say that you have to have a special type of player to play for the big clubs. You have to be able to, more talented players have played at Leeds and not handled it than certain other players that have gone and handled it because they weren't emotionally strong enough to deal with it. And Howard always said that you have to have a strong mentality to play for the top clubs, but especially like a club like Leeds where the pressure is high and you either sink or swim. And a lot of players have sank and a lot of people have swum and come through it and made them better people for it and stronger characters for it. But on the reverse of that, you also know that the pressure is there, that when things are going well, they will really back you and stick with you because they're so passionate about what they're wanting to achieve as a football club and wanting from you as an individual to make their day, their years, their months and their years.
You went on the season afterwards and fairly successful season for the club as well, coming back into the Championship, finished just outside the playoffs places. But was it a case of what could have maybe been that season? Obviously, yeah. Didn't have the best of time in the transfer market, did you, I think, in January?
Well, it was a difficult season and a good season because, as I touched on earlier, that you want to just make sure that you do enough to make sure you're in division. But at Leeds United, that wasn't the case. You have to make sure that you're mixing it with all the big clubs. And we beat QPR, who were top of the division round about Christmas, and to go second. And I remember Neil Warnock running down the tunnel, swearing his head off and this, that and the other. But we'd gone second and we're going into a January window. And we had a team there that were fantastic going forward. Your Snodgrasses, your Max Gradles, your Housens, Beckford had left at the time. But we had a real team, good team, entertaining team that would go and win 3-1, 4-2s or whatever. But I felt that we needed another experienced centre-half that could just knit things together a little bit more, that we didn't want to take away the attacking side of our game, but we had to make sure that we didn't concede too many goals. And I wanted to sign Gareth McCauley and even Casper Gorks, who I felt were dominating centre-backs that would only cost us a couple of £100,000, and the powers above me decided that we didn't need them sort of players, which in the long term, for a couple of £100,000, cost us probably promotion. You can't say it's going to guarantee you being in the top two or the top six, but I think with another more experienced centre-half, we'd have had a better opportunity to get into the top two or at least sustain being in the top six and being in the playoffs.
And the season after, obviously, was a similar case. Did you look back at that time, those years in the Championship, and like, well, sort of like what you mentioned there, but I think what could have been if you did have that extra time at the club, if you had those extra couple of seasons, do you always not regret it because it wasn't your decision, but do you think what could have been?
Because we had a real talented group of players that of a lot of that group have gone on to fulfil their potential by playing in the Premier League, and there was a lot of that group that didn't want to leave the football club because they wanted to fulfil their ambition of playing in the Premier League with Leeds United. Because if Leeds United over the last few years and in the future had ever got into the Premier League, it is still going to be classed as one of the biggest teams in the Premier League. And I had opportunities to leave Leeds, to go into the Premier League. I had two opportunities to manage clubs in the Premier League, but I always wanted to fulfil my ambition of managing the Premier League by doing it with the team that I supported, played for and was managing. And with that group of players, it slowly got dismantled and it was sort of not given that opportunity to fulfil its true potential. And people above you make a decision that things are taking you out of your hands, to selling players, to Kasper Schmeichel, who we bought in on a free transfer, only stayed with us a season because of they wanted to capitalise on getting £1 million for him on when they'd only got him on a free transfer. And people understood that it wasn't my decision why these people were leaving the football club. And if they'd all stuck together and you put all these people, these players, down on a piece of paper, you'll go, wow, what a signing, what a player. That team could have achieved something in the Premier League if it managed to get there and stuck together. And unfortunately, it got dismantled. And obviously, I was relieved of my duties when we were only 3 points off the playoffs. And really, since then, nobody's really, apart from Gary Monk and now Marcello, has got nowhere near getting into the top six, which has been really sad to see, that you're so close to achieving something which was taken away from you.
There's been a lot of speculation over the years as well. Obviously, it's been, not recently, but in that period, it's been quite turbulent at Leeds at times. A lot of speculation that
you could have like rejoined the club at times. Was there any truth behind that? Were you ever approached to rejoin the club?
Yeah, when I was at Preston, Chelino rang me about coming back to Leeds, and I've thought about it many, many more times. When I'd left Leeds, will I ever get the opportunity to go back to try and not finish off what I'd got going, but to go back to the club that I loved? And this opportunity came along, and as much as I'd have walked back, I'd have walked on hands and knees to go back to Leeds, there was something that was telling me that it wasn't the right time to do. I was at Preston at the time, and Chelino wanted me to go back, and I just had this feeling, a gut feeling, that this isn't the time to go back to work with this particular owner. And I stayed at Preston and ended up on 4.5 years there. I know that if I'd gone back to Leeds and a few games later, I might have lost my job. And that's just how that club was at that particular time with that owner, that he would go through so many managers, some obscure appointments to some good appointments. It was just a weird time in terms of what the football club was going through, and there was no stability, there was no consistency, and I didn't want to leave a club where I knew I had that at Preston, and the owners had given me an opportunity to go there in the first place, and I wanted to be loyal to them.
Yeah, didn't want to work for the manager, as he was known. After that came Huddersfield, obviously. You got a chance there. Pretty sharp after you were lost your job at Leeds. What was the thinking behind that move so quickly as well? Did you just want to get back into the game as soon as possible?
Yeah, I think it was 2 weeks later that I got the opportunity to go back to work, and that's all I'd known as a player, straight out of work, playing into management, to leaving Leeds, got this opportunity to go to Huddersfield, who were in League One at the time, and I think the fourth or fifth at the time. And it was a surprise that Dean decided to sack Lee Clark, because they'd have been on a fantastic run in the playoffs situation.
Drawing all games at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, and they'd had this run, I think, with not lost in so many games, which was a record, but not won too many. So when the opportunity came along, I felt, well, it's a good club, it's in a strong position. I might have an opportunity here, actually, because I think it was February time, to try and take the team up and get back to the Championship.
Which is what you did, of course.
Yeah, it was a strange one, because we win the semi-final, go to the final, and we won the playoff final on the 22nd penalty. You know, it's something you could not experience or could envisage was ever going to happen. My first three penalties, who were my most experienced players, missed all their penalties. And how Sheffield United didn't capitalise on us on missing our penalties, that Alex Smith scores his penalty, Steve Simonson comes up and hits this ball into the away end, and Huddersfield had promoted them back into the Championship.
I'm guessing it was quite tiring watching that penalty shootout.
Well, I remember sat with Dean Hall on the bench thinking, I didn't look at the penalties, I could just heard the reaction from the supporters of both ends, who'd scored, who'd missed. And I just thought, what will be, will be. And then Steve Simonson misses, and I turned to Dean Hall, he'd gone. All of a sudden I saw him, he was sprinting down the touchline to Alex Smithers and all the players, and it was like celebrating, and I thought, wow, I don't want to go through that experience again.
But back in the Championship then, after that, you were in quite a safe position the following season, went on a bad run towards the end of the season, lose your job. How difficult was that to take for you at the time? Because obviously the expectation level at the club seemed to be quite high, considering you were probably going to be safe that season.
Well, the thing was, again, go back to it, the ambition of Huddersfield at the time, when we got promoted, was really just to stay in the Championship the following season. But I think we got to sort of October, November time, and we went into the top six. I remember beating Blackpool at Bloomfield Road, I think it was a Monday night on telly, and we beat them to go into the top six. And this is like, and we were like, wow, we're overachieving here with a group of players. Jermaine had come and signed for me, and we had James Vaughan, and two of them were scoring goals on a regular basis, and we had a good ethic of what we're doing. But to be six in the Championship, we were certainly overachieving. But then by doing that, suddenly the expectancy level goes through the roof for everybody. So when you lose a few games and you end up sort of still above where you thought you would be come the end of the season, and people make decisions, you find it a little bit hard, because I didn't see that sacking coming. Sometimes you see them coming, sometimes you don't. That particular occasion, I went into a meeting with Dean and his board thinking, this is going to be about how we're going to stop the run of results. We've not lost 10 on the trot or something where it's really really alarming. It was a result where we'd been beat by Watford and I think Forestier and Vidra on fire that particular game, 4-1 or something. But it was all about what we can do to stop this rot, to really get back to where we were. And I walked out of the meeting sacked and I was gobsmacked because I just didn't see it coming.
But then again, it's a similar situation where you quickly got back into the game just a few weeks later at Preston, back in League One. How soon after you got the job at Preston do you know that this was going to work for you? You were going to be there for a good few years.
Well, I would have been there a week earlier if I'd not been in Dubai, because Peter Ridsdale rang me and said, look, I want to meet you about coming to Preston. And I said, look, I'm in Dubai. Because it was only 2 weeks later again or something like that that I'd left Huddersfield and I was being offered a job. And I said, I'm not coming back from Dubai. I'll meet you next week when I come back from holiday. So at least I could have 2 weeks out of away from work. And then, but I knew Peter because he was on the board at Leeds when I was a young pro there. I knew what he was like. He explained where the club was. And it was in a position where there was a lot of unrest towards the previous manager. They didn't really exactly see eye to eye. And I could just see from the club that it was a club full of tradition, history, and it was probably in a false position. I think it was fifth or sixth bottom from League One. And I had to run the risk of a little bit thinking, if I didn't turn this round, we might be in League Two here if I'm not careful. But I believed in my coaching ability, maybe the group of players it had, that we could survive that particular season, stay up, and then see where it took us for the following season after that.
And you were given the chance to build as well at the club. How important was that for you, that you got that season of stability as well that came after it, before you got that promotion?
Yeah, definitely. I think any time you're given time, it gives you an opportunity to rebuild a football club. I think every window that you're involved in, can you improve it? Can you move the squad forward? Can you do the things behind the scenes to improve a football club, from improving your staff to maybe the pitches to the gym to just... People don't always see, they just, people, supporters only see sometimes the transformation of the group of players you're working with, that X has gone out the door and Y's come in it. But it's all these other things behind the scenes that you need to do to rebuild it all. And we'll work really closely with Peter Ridsdale, that his beliefs were the same as mine. We will try and take the football club forward in every window that we're involved in. And we progressed. My first full season, we got into the playoffs and lost to Rotherham. And again, team talk at the end of that was all about using it as a motivation to try and be successful the following season.
And into that following season, obviously, the promotion came again, another promotion from League One. What was the sense like going into that game? A different sort of feel to it, obviously, than the, say, for example, the Bristol Rovers game and the Huddersfield Sheffield United match. There was a sense of you were more comfortable going into that match.
Yeah, you say that, but it was probably the one of the biggest and hardest times that I've had to deal with. That we went to Colchester last game of the season, knowing that if we won the game, we were promoted automatically, and we lost the game. The players didn't turn up, the froze on the day, and we lost the game. And I remember getting on the bus to the airport, and the coach was just so quiet. It was like, as if that was the end of the season, we'd finished, they were all going on the holidays. So I thought I needed to do something about this. So I stopped the bus and I said, look, before we get on this plane, you have been given a second opportunity now to try and still get promoted. If we'd finished seventh and lost the last game of the season and gone to seventh, we haven't got a second opportunity to get promoted. We've gone from second to third. We have still got an opportunity to get promoted back into the Championship. So let's not give up this opportunity. Yes, suffer the disappointment and the anguish of what's happened. I don't want to see you tomorrow, which was the Monday. But when we go back to work Tuesday, we are prepared physically, mentally prepared for the game at Chesterfield on the Thursday night. And we have to have this strong desire to prove people wrong, because people were questioning, had we got the bottle? The record of Preston winning the playoffs was involved in nine and not got through any of them. We have got to go into these playoffs in a positive manner, that we can go and achieve our target that we set out to do in pre-season again. And Jermaine has signed for the third time, scored a goal at Chesterfield to give us a 1-0 advantage. Go back to Deepdale in the second leg, and I think we won 3-0, and Jermaine, or something like that, Jermaine scores from the halfway line, and we got to the playoff final. But it was all about the negativity still around the club that nine times, this is the 10th time of a playoff final that we would go there. How are we going to deal with that situation? And my answer was to everybody, records are there to be broken. Somewhere down the line, Preston North End will win a playoff final. And we're playing Swindon, who were, under Mark Cooper, one of the most footballing teams in the division. They had possession of the ball, they had some good players. And we knew we were in for a tough test. But what we had is a week or so to do all our work on the pitch. I made Deepdale the same size as Wembley, so we could work out. I knew exactly how Mark was going to play. We knew that they'd have the ball more than us, and we'd need to do this. So we worked, and then my team early on, and we did all the preparation. And we knew that we could play a certain way, we would win the game. And when you look on stats, and people talk about stats being a major part of football, Swindon had 65% of the possession, but we won 4-0. And that's all that matters. And we got over the anguish of the playoff campaigns previously that happened.
I know we've talked about Jermaine quite a lot, but he's someone, well, again, when I spoke to him, he holds you very high in terms of his
career.
So
he should.
Yeah. but he's someone you signed three times, yeah. He played for you for three times. How much of an influence has he had, sort of like, on your career as well, I suppose? Because he has given you those big moments himself.
Oh, without a shadow of doubt. He's made me lose my hair like I am now on many occasions, to being an unbelievable talent, to the goal-scoring exploits that he does, to scoring at Old Trafford, the Bristol Rovers games, to the playoff final for Preston, where he scored a hat-trick. And he enjoys that. And again, it's down to the man management. You couldn't beat Jermaine with a stick because he wouldn't take to that. But give him an arm around him that you would get the best out of him. But on the other side of as well, all them good moments, he has let himself down with me as well. I remember he came on the pitch he ended up getting sent off with Owen Doyle at Sheffield Wednesday for Preston because they were fighting with each other. And I remember thinking, I've never experienced this as a manager before. You got two of your own players sent off in the one game for fighting with each other. And I remember getting a text off the both of them and an apology from them about why they'd done it and how what had happened. So we put it all to bed. Jermaine comes back Boxing Day from his suspension playing Leeds United at Deepdale. So I said to him, look, go and influence the game. I know every time you play against Leeds, it's not easy. They want you to do the salute. They want you to wave to the crowd. Go and influence the game in a positive way that you can do. Well, basically, 5 minutes into the game, Jermaine does something and he gets sent off. And it's like, wow, I didn't see that coming. He'd just come on a sub and he gets sent off. And I'm like, flipping out now. What have you done? Why have you done this again? And so all of a sudden, sort of, he had these bad moments as well, but we had a relationship, and even now we keep in touch a lot. He does a lot of things for my charities, that events that I do, and we hold each other in high regard because I know I've been good for him, but he's certainly been good for me.
And like you said, a player for those big moments as well, isn't he? But he also mentioned to me that he'd be interested in like working for you in the future as well. Is that something you'd ever consider having Jermaine as part of your staff?
Well, he came to Blackpool earlier this year to watch training. He's doing some of his badges. So I can never say never. His experience. Did I think when he was at Leeds he'd be a manager? Oh, sorry, he wanted to be a coach, because I didn't see him being a coach because of how he played was based on instinctive situations rather than coaching and developing people. But he's learnt over the years and spoke to people and played at the highest level, so why shouldn't he be a coach? And even one of the charity events recently, he put up his services to an auction prize where he'd go and coach a team in the future for X amount of money. And so, of course, he's a great lad, held high regard with a lot of people, so he might get a manager's job and I might have to go and work with him. Never mind me have a job and he comes and works for me. It might be the other way around, who knows?
You might end up being his assistant.
Yeah, exactly.
but then obviously it's Preston, a few more seasons of consolidated success relatively in the Championship, and you make the decision to then move to Sunderland. Was it a similar feeling maybe of the opportunity that you had from the time at Blackpool going to Leeds? You saw the opportunity of Sunderland, which was one that you couldn't turn down.
Yeah, I'd been at Preston for 4.5 years, and as I said, I'd had opportunities to leave there, but I was loyal to the club, liked working for the club, was building something, bought a lot of players in for small money, and we were building this real good, close-knit team that could go and do really well. First year in the Championship, finished 11th, second season 11th, I think it was, in a budget that was the bottom three, and we were building something, and I didn't want to leave Preston, but when the opportunity came to go to Sunderland, it was too big an attraction to go to because they were an ex-Premier League club. And I didn't want, I looked back and I thought about it long and hard. It wasn't a decision that I made just, oh, I'm definitely going to do this. I thought, I don't want to look back and think somebody has taken Sunderland back to the Premier League and that could have been me and have any regrets. So I made that decision to go there, and when I made that decision, I probably didn't realise that it was going to be a bigger job than I first expected.
And how soon after you took the job as well? I know it's probably insignificant in terms of, you know, how you approached the job, but how soon after did you know about that, the documentary, for example, and how much of an effect did that have on you as well in terms of how, I don't know, you approach things? Because obviously the cameras were there quite a lot of the time.
I think in terms of how quickly did I understand that it was going to be a more difficult job than I thought? Probably within a few days, because you could just sense the unrest amongst the group. There was players that certainly didn't want to be there, didn't think they deserved to be playing in the Championship. So there was a lot of negativity around the place. I generally thought as well that the group of players that we had there wasn't that great anyway, even though they were Premier League players. I thought, this isn't a good, this group here now that's just come from the Premiership isn't as good as the group that I've just left at Preston, who would run through a brick wall for you. The attitudes of the lads at Sunderland was really poor at times. The documentary was already in place by the time I got there. Did the documentary have much of an influence on how things were run? Not really, because as much as I wouldn't have agreed to it if I'd had the opportunity in the first place, and I know Chris Coleman didn't want to do it as well when he got there, it was already agreed, so he had to run with it. But we still had the influence of where the cameras went. They weren't in the dressing room. They weren't on the training pitch doing certain things. So it wasn't as if they had a free rein to expose us in any light or whatever. And of course, there's certain situations you're thinking, well, that is completely different to how it was in reality, to me celebrating a goal when we beat Norwich 3-1. And you're celebrating at the stadium light when we're at Carrow Road, where there's green seats around you. And you know that these documentaries can infiltrate you as a good cop, bad cop at times. You have to, because it'll be boring if it's not. I just thought it was a perception of, I was made out to be maybe sort of the one who sort of laid the foundations to the disappointment of relegation. But ultimately, Chris found it really difficult after there, and it was probably the whole environment and football club was always going to suffer the disappointment of, or it was more difficult for us to be successful up there than people actually realised. And the documentary perceived you as this, that and the other, but they didn't put into context certain situations of team meetings and that when they were actually done. I think one of the meetings was done with a flip chart and everybody thought it was a team meeting. Well, it was done in pre-season, 6 hours before a game or whatever. It wasn't my big Winston Churchill motivational speech. It was an outline of what we wanted to do and what it meant. So there's a perception out there of what things are, and that's why these documentaries can be perceived in certain manners.
Hi guys, it's Jack Butner from Stoke City. Just wanted to say, in these strange times that we're living in, very uncertain times, stay safe, stay at home. It'll be worth it in the end. It'll all blow over and we'll be back to football, back to our jobs, before we know it. But stay home, stay safe.
Well, I put the question to fans before this podcast took place, like, has anyone got any questions for Simon Grayson? A lot of them mentioned the clipboard, the whiteboard, actually. But one fan says, how much do you regret now, looking back, leaving Preston to go to Sunderland?
I've had no regrets in my life what I do. I make decisions and whether they turn out to be positive or not, I would have had a bigger regret if I'd gone to Sunderland and the team had got promoted and I'd turned down the opportunity. Of course, you look back and get sacked so quickly and seeing how Preston have developed with a large proportion of the group that I'd put together, how the players have developed and gone forward. I knew that that group of players, the players that I was leaving at Preston at that time, had the capabilities of going on to get better and better because of the team ethic, the spirit that I'd had, the quality that he had. But I just felt that at that particular time, Preston maybe wasn't going to have the bigger picture of trying to get promoted, of 35, 40,000 supporters on a regular basis to the stadium, to the training facilities. And that's no disrespect to Preston. It was still building as a football club. And that's why I look back and thinking I still don't regret going, because it didn't work out how I'd like to have done. But that's these things happen in life.
And someone else has asked as well. I'll just introduce this here now, because I did ask the fans, so I suppose
no
problem. Honour it.
It's always nice to put people in the picture clear of instances of what's maybe happened, and they
exactly
don't see or people see what they want to see.
Yeah, I mean, this is an easier question. I don't necessarily think this is from a Sunderland fan, but he says, if you could have one managerial stint work out better, which job would he choose? Which job would you choose? I'm guessing it's between Leeds and Sunderland.
Yeah, if I'm being honest, I'd like to have had the Leeds one turn out, where I got promoted back to the Premier League and got the group of players that we've touched on to try and achieve my ambition of managing the Premier League with the team that you support. In terms of the next one would be probably Sunderland, because I'd made a big decision to leave a group of players which did everything for me and had a real bond with. So that was a difficult decision. So I'd like the Sunderland one to have turned out better because of, from a personal point of view, but also for that club had suffered a lot of disappointment over a number of years and are still suffering that disappointment.
But coming back to the documentary, not focusing on it specifically, but one thing you did see in it was you did have difficulty recruiting players. How much was that down to maybe, you know, the detriment of the club at the time coming down into the Championship, the fact that you weren't able to sign players who you believe, you know, could have added to the group?
I think the problem that I had at Sunderland at the time, that there was no money. And that was the underlying problem for
it. You got that impression from the documentary?
Yeah, well, it was there. In the summer of me going in August, we brought in something like £50 million of transfers in, from Barini going AC Milan to Pickford to Everton. I think he'd already gone at Jordan by the time I'd got there, but other players had gone as well. So suddenly bringing that revenue into the football club to then replacing it with 12, 13 new players for £1 million shouldn't be the case for a club like Sunderland, but it was. And that was the problem that you had. You're bringing in free transfers and players that were probably not good enough to play for Sunderland as well, but that's the market that you're shopping in, and that's hence why the club has struggled for the last few years because of the financial aspects of it all.
And do you think anyone could have turned it around? Do you think you could have turned it around yourself if you were given that time?
At the particular time, I generally felt that I would still be able to achieve a mark of some success, but at that particular time, I got sacked because the ambition of the club was to be in around the playoffs. Do I think I would have kept them in the Championship? I genuinely believe I would have done, and not taken them down. And that's no disrespect to Chris, but I do think that I would have been able to do that. But at that particular time in October, I think it was, the ambition was to be in around the playoffs. So I get why I was sat, because it was not, the results were not right. But if the overall package of was just all about staying in the Championship, then I certainly know I would have done that.
I mean, that sacking obviously well documented, well publicised, but you, in terms of your career, you don't seem to be someone who's afraid of taking risks. And I think that's probably highlighted with the Bradford job, maybe. How did you get into the process of getting that job? And how long before you got it did you know there were going to be problems there? Because it was interesting how you got it, wasn't it?
Yeah, I always remember, actually, we took Sunderland to Bradford pre-season game. And speaking to Stuart McCall, and Stuart says, I've got this owner who's absolutely mad as atter, and he wants to do this, he wants to do that. And you're listening, but you're not taking too much interest on it to a certain degree, because it's not my business. So we can all have arguments and disputes with owners, etc. So I took it on board, but didn't think too much of it. And then I lost my job, and then I had 3 or 4 months out, and I got this opportunity, and I thought, Bradford were in the top six of League One. It's close to home. Should I take it or shouldn't I do? Knowing what I'd spoke to, heard about from Stuart, but also had heard from other people that were connected with the club as well. But I had the opportunity of a 3-year contract there, and I decided that I'd only take it to the end of the season with an option in my favour to extend the contract if I wanted to stay on. And then you get into the job, and then you're thinking, well, this is probably like people were saying and what I've heard. And you don't realise sometimes from the outside what football clubs are like until you get in amongst them, what goes on behind the scene, what certain people like, what sort of influence people want on the running of a football club, and what's wrong with a football club. My perspective of a football club and my attitude as a coach, manager, has always been that I will get an influence from me onto the team and be successful, because for large parts I've always done that. So I thought at Bradford I would go in there, work my magic, stay in the top six, get into the playoffs, and let's see what happens. Well, it isn't until you get into there that maybe some sort of naivety from myself of going into a football club, but I was doing it because I trust my ability of what I've done previously that would do the things that I've just suggested would happen. But then you don't realise, as I said, until you get in there, that the influences that were going on behind the scenes, from the owner falling out with players over contracts to supporters being disgruntled because of this, because of that, and certain other things, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, this has been some 3 months. And then I just made a decision at the end of that season thinking, I don't want to work in this environment because I can see something going drastically wrong, and I don't want to be part of this. I'm not prepared to work as hard as I do to not be given the tools or the opportunity to be successful. And a lot of people might have stayed on for the 2 odd years plus on your contract by extending it, but I took a tough decision by saying that I don't want to be part of this. And unfortunately for Bradford City's perspective, all them feelings that I thought could come true certainly did, because that following season the owner went through 2 or 3 different managers, and ultimately the club got relegated to League Two.
Dodged a bullet in a way.
In a way, yeah. And again, the easy option would have been to stay on, just to work, stay in work, to pick up my money and do whatever I wanted, but I didn't feel comfortable in doing that.
But then, obviously, the return to Blackpool came about. Hasn't obviously gone to plan for you, but how much did you enjoy the experience, and how much did you enjoy going back to the club where it all began for you in terms of your management career?
Well, first and foremost, I had a year out, and that's the first time that I've had a full season. I remember being the first time in 32 years that I'd not started a pre-season the other summer. And it was weird that everybody's going back and doing the signings, and I'm like, God, this is what I'm used to doing. But eventually I got my head round it. I got myself busy doing a lot of this media work for all the outlets, covering league football, EFL to Premier League, to FA Cup, to other games. Went off and experienced things that I've never had time to do, from doing cycling stag do's to going off and watching other coaches coach. I went to PSG to watch them train, doing what you do in general life. I watched my son make his debut, which was one of the greatest feelings you can have as a parent, that I'd have been working on that particular night when he made his debut for Blackburn Rovers. So I was there watching as a dad be the most nervous that I've ever been at any football club, at any match that I've been involved in, and that's the playoff games and finals that I've been involved, because I couldn't influence anything that was doing. Every time we got it, I'm like, don't make a mistake, because you're a dad and you're not having any influence. And I'm so glad that I was out of work to be able to sample that. He went to Grimsby on loan, which allowed me to go and watch him play. So I kept really busy, but then it got to the back end of the season and I'm doing all the playoff semi-finals with my media stuff, and it was like I went to Ireland with Mick McCarthy and meeting lads on the grass again, and I'd not done that for a few months, and I'm thinking, this is what I've been used to doing. This is what I've done all my career, playing and managing for 32 years. I'm now getting the edge back into my fire in my belly again. And I'd turned down half a dozen jobs in that year to go back to work, but because they weren't the right ones for me, I didn't think I was ready for it, and I was enjoying what I was doing. But then I thought, that summer, I'm ready to go back to work. I spoke to one or two other clubs about jobs, one in the Championship, one up in Scotland, because I was ready to go back to work. And it was nice to be approached for good jobs. And then the Blackpool job came available, and I met the owner, and I felt that it was a good opportunity to not to go back to the club, but it was more about what the future could entail with a football club. Everything he was saying was, we're going to rebuild this club. It's going to be built on sand for a year, on sand for years and years. We've got to make sure that we build it. We've got no aspirations really of being promoted this year, but we'd like to be in amongst it. We'd like to then, over the next 2 or 3 years, keep building the club, get the supporters back, have a new training ground. And as long as we're seeing the team getting better, and the influence of yourself and building and building, that's all we're looking for. And so some people talk like that. And then we go 2 points off top in January, in December, and the expectancy level has gone through the roof. And probably by doing that, the expectancy level's too high and you end up losing your job off the back of it. Maybe I've got to learn a lesson that you should just keep your team sort of in the low expectancy levels, and then nobody can get too carried away themselves. But that's just football, and that's how football has changed over the number of years, that people want success, they're hungry for success, but sometimes clubs aren't ready for success like people, how they want it to be.
And in terms of, obviously, we touched on it earlier, in terms of your break now, and you know, you're enjoying things now, but you know, what's next for Simon Grayson in terms of your career now? Is it a job as a manager in the short term, or are you looking more longer term in terms of having another extended break maybe?
I honestly don't know what I'm going to do. The Blackpool one has been tough to take, because from somebody saying that I was going to be given a long time to do this, that and the other, and you weren't, and didn't ride a little bit of criticism from supporters, or when you go through a tough time, it makes you think, do I need to go through all this of being a manager again, and or being a coach, and going through sort of criticism and the pressure that you have to deal with? Or do I want to go to my media, or do I just want to go and do something else? I don't know. Obviously, the way football is at the moment in time, there's far more bigger issues that are around at this moment in time for the whole country and the whole world at this moment in time. So when football eventually gathers itself and gets back up, maybe I might have a different idea of what I want to do. I've been in India for 10 days. Recently went to Mumbai, see a friend out there, took in a life experience of being in Mumbai, Goa, watched their equivalent of their final, where I met Owen Call, was out there in his team. So managed to go to somewhere in the world that I've never been before. Maybe there's going to be other opportunities, somewhere like that, in terms of a life experience, and not just football. There's more to life outside of than just football. But have I still got that hunger and desire in my belly? Only when football comes back to being available again will I probably know that.
And finally, I just want to ask, it might be a difficult question for you, because you seem to have had a lot of ups and downs in your career, but out of your lists of, you know, your achievements, what would you look back and say is the greatest?
The proudest one will be the promotion with Leeds, because of what it meant personally as a supporter, what it meant to that city and what it meant to that football club, and how we overcame a lot of adversity in that particular time. In life, you never go through everything smoothly all the time, and certainly as a footballer, football manager, you come through periods where you've not been successful, stronger. Weak people will not be able to deal with situations. I feel myself, I'm a strong character from as a player, suffering disappointments of losing finals, to being left out of teams, to being bombed out of squads. I come through and use them as a motivation to turn it into a positive than a negative. And in my managing career, I've had good times, bad times, It's how you come through them things. And if I go, what I would look back on when I die or whatever, is that people look on me and say, well, he was a good guy, people who liked him, but he also, he gave everything to what he did, whether it's managing, playing, cycling, whatever I do, I always want to do to the best of my capabilities, and I've no regrets in what you do. So good times, bad times, just remain sort of humble and enjoy what you're doing, because for what, 32 years now, 33 years, I've done something that playing, managing, that people can never take away from me. I've played 500 league games, I've had promotions as a player, I've had nearly 700 games as a manager, promotions, managed some of the biggest clubs in England. And what I will look back on is that if somebody offered me at 16 when I was leaving school, Simon, this is what you're going to do when you get to 50, this is what you've achieved, I'd have taken that as we are at this moment in time. And who knows where the future's going to be. I look on in the future and think, hopefully my son will go and develop his career as a 21-year-old soon at Blackburn, that he'll go and have a good career, but ultimately be a good person when he finishes his career and has the right attitudes, and people will look on him and say, right, he was a good lad to work with.
Yes, good luck to Simon and his son Joe, who's a prospect at Blackburn Rovers. Thanks again for listening. Make sure you like and subscribe to help other people find the show. Bye for now.
Hey everyone, it's Robert Earnshaw. Nottingham Forest, Cardiff City, West Brom. Just want to deliver a very important message. We need to stay home. We need to stay home. Protect the NHS. And ultimately, we save lives. And we do it together.